Good afternoon. You're listening to KTOO. I'm Yvonne Crumry. Thanks for tuning in. Juneau's longtime fire chief announced he plans to retire later this fall. Rich Etheridge has been at the helm of Capital City Fire and Rescue for more than 15 years. During that time, he led the department as it responded to countless house fires, searches and rescues, and natural disaster events. He says he intends to help recruit and train his replacement before his departure, which doesn't have a firm date yet. He says retirement kind of crept up on him.
You know, everybody said you'll just know when it's time. And I'm like, yeah, what do you, I don't know what that meant. But it's true. You just know.
Etheridge has worked in public service for more than 3 decades. During that time, he served as an Alaska State Trooper and Juneau's fire marshal before becoming chief. He says he plans to enjoy his retirement in Juneau, spending time with family and growing his woodworking business. He says he hopes to see the department continue to focus on recruiting and retaining employees after his departure. Earlier this summer, CCFR announced it would pilot a paid internship program this year to equip locals with certifications and skills needed to work in the field. Etheridge says he thinks the new program will serve as a long-term investment in the department's future and help combat its chronic understaffing issues. He shared a piece of advice that he thinks everyone should know when it comes to fire safety.
I would say get rid of that mindset, it won't happen to me. Everybody that we go to these emergencies, that's the number one thing they say is, I never thought it would happen to me, because you don't pay attention to fire safety or your safety going in the outdoors, because we all have this feeling of invincibility.
The city intends to begin recruiting for the position in the coming weeks. And the National Weather Service has canceled a flood warning for Mendenhall Lake and River this morning after a second minor glacial lake outburst flood occurred last night. The flood crested at 7:30 p.m. at 9.6 feet, which was much earlier and lower than predicted. The National Weather Service originally issued a flood warning Monday morning after indications that the water in Suicide Basin had started to release from the basin and into Mendenhall Lake. The U.S. Department of Education announced last week that it will cut millions in federal grants for its Alaska Native and Native Hawaiian Serving Institutions program. Many Alaska institutions, which have student bodies largely composed of Alaska Native and Indigenous people, depend on that funding to keep certain programs and services afloat. As Shelby Herbert reports for the Alaska Desk, the cuts will be felt on campuses across the state.
Relative to the University of Alaska System's entire $250 million federal research portfolio, the potential loss of grants under what is commonly known as Title III is small, according to a University of Alaska spokesperson. But at the University of Alaska Fairbanks, administrators say they anticipate losing about $13 million in grant funding. All of that would have supported several UAF student support services and degree programs, some of which are based at satellite campuses in Nome, Kotzebue, Dillingham, and Bethel. In an emailed statement, UAF Interim Chancellor Mike Sfraga said the cuts will likely impact the university's mission to support Alaska Native students, which make up over 20% of the student body, as well as Alaskans at large. Ryan Uher is UAF's Interim Vice Chancellor of Rural Community and Native Education. He says serving Alaska Native students is deeply important to UAF's past and future.
It really is part of the blood and the history of the University of Alaska Fairbanks to serve this population. For that, I think a large thing that contributes to that high of a demographic is because we have what we call rural campuses in various locations across Alaska.
The grant program was deemed unconstitutional by the U.S. Solicitor General back in July. Uher says the university used that funding to develop many different technical degree programs, which are now in jeopardy. A prospective student's race is not a barrier to enter those programs, which Uher says offer training to meet a variety of rural workforce needs, from tribal governance to American Sign Language translation and other technical skills.
Developing a new private pilot ground school on supporting rural communities and rural residents due to that barrier of transportation and reliance on air travel. Developing a new occupational endorsement in information technology.
The federal government is allowing up to a year for universities to close out the programs funded by the grants. UAF administrators say they're still assessing the scope of the financial impact, which does not directly fund student aid. However, many of the grants are tied to personnel. The university has not yet made any decisions about staff cuts or layoffs. A UA spokesperson says, at the moment, University of Alaska Southeast administrators are still waiting for more information about the future of a Title III grant awarded to their Sitka campus, which manages relationships between faculty and students, particularly those who are non-traditional, first-generation, and under-supported. Outside of the University of Alaska system, administrators at the Illisakvik College, a tribal land-grant community college in Utqiagvik, say they're monitoring the Title III cuts, but declined an interview. The U.S. Department of Education also declined a request for comment. Reporting in Fairbanks, I'm Shelby Herbert.
And it's well documented by now that the marine heat wave that hit the Pacific Ocean in 2014 had devastating effects on Alaska's marine ecosystem and commercial fisheries. Now scientists studying killer whales in Alaska are uncovering long-term impacts. That's bad news, as marine heat waves become more frequent and severe with climate change. The Alaska Desk's Avery Elfelt reports.
John Durbin has been studying killer whales in the Gulf of Alaska for 2 decades. The senior scientist with the New England Aquarium in Boston says that when a marine heat wave, known as the blob, struck the area a decade ago, some whales died. But the impact on the surviving whales was less clear. Now, Durbin says, there are some answers.
For example, we've learned that females that were growing during those heat wave years grew to smaller sizes than the females that had grown before.
He says that has major long-term implications for the local population's health and reproductive success.
If you're smaller as a whale, it means you don't have as much fasting endurance. You can't store as much blubber. So if you go through lean times, you're less likely to bring a successful pregnancy to term.
Durbin has been partnering with the Alaska-based nonprofit North Gulf Oceanic Society to monitor several hundred resident salmon-eating killer whales in the Gulf of Alaska. He flies drones over the water that capture images of the whales from more than 100 feet in the air. Those images allow researchers to measure how the same whales are developing over time. The drones also carry something called a laser altimeter, which documents how high the camera is so researchers can scale the measurements to determine the whale's real size.
By looking at growth and body condition, it tells us about the health of the whales before they die, before they have reproductive effects.
The technology has delivered some good news. This summer, Durbin observed 3 new calves, plus some slightly older ones that appeared to be healthy and growing as expected. He says that could mean the population is on a path to recovery. But that doesn't mean the Gulf's resident orcas are in the clear. The females impacted by the heat wave may be less resilient in the face of future events, such as heat waves or dips in the salmon population.
We're cautiously optimistic, but I think it does mean that there's some vulnerable whales out there.
Durbin says the findings underscore the importance of studying apex predators. They rely on species down the food chain, which means they can serve as early indicators of trouble in the broader ecosystem. He says the findings also highlight something else. The threat of climate change.
These marine heat waves that we're starting to see an increasing duration intensity around the world are having really important effects on marine food webs.
His latest scientific findings haven't yet been published, but Durbin says he's working on several scientific papers that lay out evidence that the so-called blob is still impacting killer whales' growth and reproductive success today, a full decade later. Reporting in Haines, I'm Avery Elfelt.
And you're listening to Tongass Voices, perspectives from the homelands of the Occoquan and beyond. Juneau High School students Olivia Gomez and Maddie Bass are playing student debaters in Perseverance's new play, What the Constitution Means to Me. The play reflects playwright Heidi Schreck's experience as a teenager participating in constitutional debates in 1989 and how it influenced her understanding of the foundational document of our government as an adult. During the play's run, Gomez and Bass step into Schreck's shoes and draw on their own experience in high school debate.
I'm Olivia Gomez. I'm a senior at Juneau Douglas High School. I play debater in the performance, What the Constitution Means to Me. Aside from that, I'm also the debate captain of Juneau Douglas's drama debate and forensics team. I'm very proud to be.
Hi, my name's Maddie Bass. I'm a sophomore at Juneau Douglas High School. I'm Olivia's understudy for the role of debater and What the Constitution Means to Me. I've also been debating for 1 year.
I will say debate, particularly because a lot of the topics are politically focused, it really gives you a more open-minded perspective going into things. Like, you're kind of forced to hear these resolutions and you have your preliminary ideas about it, for example, the topic for nationals last year was on balance, the benefits of executive orders outweigh their harms. And of course, everyone kind of has their bias on it, but you're kind of forced to consider both aspects of it and really consider, okay, I have to weigh these really hard factors. And I think that's really helpful, not especially for younger minds, because I really believe that we need more young people politically involved.
Our world has drastically changed since Heidi Schreck was a teenager. So it's a really interesting way for the audience to see how, even though, you know, Heidi was talking about the Constitution, what was it, 30 years ago, and it's still just as relevant to us today. I've learned the most about the laws of this country and how my own life has been shaped by the Constitution from these past couple weeks working on this play. You know, it's the baseline for all the protections and all the harms for people in this country, which is something so fascinating and so scary at the same time.
Yeah. Obviously, this script was written a while ago, but I really truly think that what makes this play so special is that its importance is timeless. It will always be relevant in how we can better shape our democracy, the question of how we can get better as a country, which is really what the play centers around, and how we can fight for better, positive human rights for all of us is really the theme that it shows.
There are two different versions of the debate. So if you go and watch this play, you're going to see a coin flip. That coin flip is real. We don't know which side we're taking when we go into this performance. So there is that little bit of improvisation in there too. Yeah.
There's also a little room for mystery as to which side we'll be arguing, which is going to be really cool because we're also going to be keeping tally of which way the audience votes, because the audience will be our judges.
That was Juno student debaters Olivia Gomez and Maddie Bass. You can see their debate skills in action in the Perseverance play, What the Constitution Means to Me, which is running for the next couple of weeks. This is KTOO. And for the weather here in Juno, it's currently 54 degrees and cloudy. This afternoon, it looks like it'll be a little bit dry, but the rain is supposed to kick up again tonight with heavy rain tomorrow. And the rain looks like it'll last the rest of the week, coming in and out of periods of heavy rain with temperatures in the 50s. You're listening to KTOO. For more news, go to ktoo.org. Thank you for tuning in.